This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Get charged up for action that'll shock your system.
Tell me that's not cool.
An unstoppable superhero and his crew embark on impossible missions and will bring mutated villains to justice.
When static's in the house, bad guys better step off.
Pull the plug on crime with the adventures of Static Shock. Yeah!
Welcome, everybody, to episode 272 of the DCAU Review. Hey, that rhymes, as so often is the case when we get to these numbered episodes. I am one of your hosts, Cal. With me, my good friend, my good brother, the man that runs most of our social media accounts, including Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and Instagram, for the most part. It's Liam. Liam, welcome to a brand new month, especially if you're listening to this on the day that it drops, or perhaps the week that it drops. We are in a brand new month here, and that means we are out with the old, in with the new. We are switching shows, as we tend to do from month to month. We wrapped up last week with an Elseworlds tale of the Batman, as we had a little mini celebration of the 30th anniversary of Nightfall. We might have a bonus episode before the year's out talking specifically about Nightfall, but we had a couple of great back-to-back episodes talking. We were riding the Bane train, as we called it, but now the train has left the station. The Bane train has left the station, and we have taken a southbound train towards the sunny skies of Dakota for the majority of this month. And that means we're talking Static Shock.
That's absolutely right. And we have sort of a Trojan horse secret theme for this month, which we will talk more about at the end of this week's episode. But yes, we are kicking it off first with an episode entitled Attack of the Living Brain Puppets, sort of the series homage to a classic zombie horror movie, and a good deal of a little bit of Hanna-Barbera and the DNA of this too. I think we'll talk about it as we get into our main categories, but yeah, a lot of fun stuff to get into today.
Absolutely. A very fun episode we're about to chat about. And of course, this episode is from season 2 of Static Shock. And it originally aired on the Kids WB here in the United States on April the 6th, 2002, meaning we just passed the 21-year anniversary of this episode's original debut. So, you know, that means it can buy alcohol in every state in the United States. So that means no alcohol restrictions for this episode. But before we get into our breakdown of the episode and as well as our scores for our categories, we will, of course, get to the official Internet Movie Database synopsis for this week's episode, which, as it is each and every week, is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe, and you'll get some tremendous content delivered to you on a weekly basis from the great folks at Watchtower Database that have their ongoing Jump on the Batwagon podcast, which as of right now is going through the Batman the Animated Series, and I believe James's ultimate goal is to go through the entire DCAU, but that's kind of fun because they're doing it as in air date order. So be sure to check that out. That's pretty fun. And then, of course, you get the entire Tim Talk podcast, which has already reviewed this episode that we're covering today, as well as every other episode of the DCAU. And they've done it in their own unique way. Lots of content from them on the same channel. And of course, our entire catalog as well, all available in one convenient place, ready for you to stream at your convenience. That's at youtube.com/thepodtower. Head over today and subscribe.
Absolutely. So this is the synopsis for Attack of the Living Brain Puppets, which was written by Len Yulee, directed by Dave Klistek. I'm going to get that pronunciation right, I promise. But music by Richard Wolff and animation by Tama Production Co. And that synopsis reads as such. Control freak Madeline. No, control freak's a different villain. Control freak Madeline gains control. Terrible. Ugh. Oh. I have to start over because the sentence structure is bad.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Power and on through. Control freak Madeline gains control over the human mind and takes over the entire freshman class to become their president. Static is the only one immune.
Oh boy. Not a great synopsis there. Gonna go with can't use the same word twice in the same sentence. That's a big no-no. Can't double down on that. Static being the only one who is immune feels like a minor plot point. You didn't necessarily need to mention it in the synopsis for the episode. Perhaps Static has to stop her. Would have been significant enough. Or Static is the only one who can stop her. That makes him seem a lot more heroic. Instead, we ended up with that mess. And I would give that a D minus. No infactual parts of it, but definitely not very strong at all.
Agreed.
All right. So that will bring us to our plot synopsis. Not a high bar to try and cross there, Liam, but we will do our very best not to disappoint. As we start the episode off, we have a young lady who is walking around campaigning, talking about the various different things that she is trying to get elected as class president for, the changes that she's going to make. And we learn this is a young Madeline Spaulding is her name. She's running for class president. She has ways that she's going to change the class, and she's being dismissed by many people. It's very clear that she's really, really not very popular, doesn't seem to have very many fans, not many people interested. And wouldn't you know it, as she's walking around, Static arrives at school, doing his best to fly behind some bushes and change back into his civilian state as Virgil, and nearly gets discovered. His secret identity nearly gets discovered as Madeline interrupts and happens to hear him in the bushes changing. He makes up a quick excuse and quickly realizes that Madeline really isn't paying attention to anything or why he would be in a bush. She's simply focused on getting her points across as to why she needs to be made class president.
That was such an easy morning patrol. I still have 15 minutes before class starts.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, I just, see, I lost a book, which is why I'm back here.
Hello, my name is Madeline Spaulding.
Madeline, I know. We're in the same homeroom.
Then you may also know that I'm running for freshman president.
Good for you. Well, I'd better...
And if elected, I will do all I can to make Dakota Union a high school of which everyone can be proud. In fact, I've drawn up a description of my platform that includes 32 issues. Item 1, uniforms.
Madeline.
To keep distractions such as improper clothing or social pressures from negatively impacting the educational environment.
Gotta run.
But I didn't finish explaining. One signature down, 49 to go.
He's the first needed of 50. So she's got a big, big hill to climb if she's going to be entered into the race as a candidate, we discover. we flash into the school where we see Richie is not too happy with the vending machine. It's eaten his money. He's very frustrated. Virgil does help him out a little bit by using a little bit of electricity, you know, that whenever it's needed, the electricity comes into play. He shocks it enough where not only does it spit out what Richie wanted, but it then spits out about half a dozen other items, causing both Richie and Static to fly backwards into the wall. And Static gets pelted with some fruit, leading to all kinds of humor there. So we cut to Richie, who talks, who's in the lunchroom with Virgil. They're talking about how there have been complaints about the vending machines for months, and nothing has been done about it. So Richie is encouraged at that point to run for class president himself, and stands up on top of a table, gets a full endorsement from Static, and it's very clear that Richie has a large support group from his fellow classmates. This, of course, leaving Madeline quite frustrated, quite upset, as she realizes that that Richie is now probably going to get the nomination as opposed to her to run against Joey Bambora, who is also running for class president. So she immediately becomes jealous, and but her jealousy seems to be leading to the stomach pains that she's having. She sort of doubles over a little bit, and Static and Richie show concern for her, but she insists that everything's okay. She walks away, begins doubling over again as the pain continues, and then we get this odd flashback to what we learn is the night of the Big Bang, with her interviewing a very familiar-looking homeless man who...
That's right.
Talk about, I guess we don't need to talk about it in visuals, but is in fact the same homeless guy that turns into Ragtag in the episode later on, the magic homeless man, if you recall.
That's right. Gives Richie superpowers for a minute.
That's right. Never seen again outside of this episode, though. We learned that she was there next to Ragtag, also gained superpowers in the same Big Bang, of course. And she realizes at this point, as her eyes are opened, that she may or may not have the ability to influence those around her, as she begins not only reading people's thoughts, she begins the ability to hear people's thoughts, what they're thinking all throughout the lunchroom. But as she sees two of the larger, I believe, junior varsity football team players make eye contact with her, and they think that she's staring at them. They say some intimidating words towards her, but she tells them to buzz off and is able to turn them into the sort of mindless zombies, if you will. And they actually obey her very word and begin acting like flies. And this dawns on her immediately that she has the ability to not only read people's minds, but control them as well.
I can't believe Mr. Lawler gave us a quiz.
Yo odio esta cafeteria y la comida.
Oh, there's Brian. He is such a hottie.
She's looking at my zit. I know she is.
I hope they don't beat me up again.
Hey, Spalding. You got a problem?
Yeah, her problem is nobody's gonna vote for her.
Why don't you both buzz off?
Huh? Buzz, 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 buzz.
I can control them.
That's right. She says as much just to really drive that point home. But yes, as mentioned there, we go to the next day where we see a pep rally where the candidates are formally announcing their candidacy. And we see Joey up there about to give the speech to the most popular guy in school. And as Virgil and Richie are backstage sort of discussing things, they notice that Madeline is also nearby. And once again, she uses her mental powers to take over Joey's brain and decides he's not going, and all of a sudden Joey decides he isn't going to run for class president after all. And as Richie approaches Madeline, he too is affected, and as she goes through Richie's mind, she makes a pretty interesting discovery, as she notes that Virgil is a lot more interesting of a guy at her school than she realizes, and literally runs off into the shadows. This episode is so silly. I love it, but it's so silly. So she runs away, and Richie notes that he felt like he could hear Madeline's voice in his head as he began to sort of lose his mind there, and then they all see also what's happening to Joey. So Virgil is a little bit concerned, and decides he's gonna go home and do a little bit of reading. He borrows Sharon's textbooks about psychology to try to understand what's happening. And I love this bit.
Well, looky here, Virgil Hawkins, slack off extraordinaire, actually hitting the books.
Uh-huh.
Mr. All School Merit Scholar, Mr. I don't need to study. Mr., what are you reading?
Hmm?
These are my psychology books.
I know, sorry, but I need to learn about how the mind works.
In case you ever get one?
Come on, I won't hurt him.
Then maybe next time you'll ask before you just grab my stuff.
Please, Sharon. Some of the kids at school have been acting weird. I'm trying to figure out why.
Go on.
I figure maybe it's drugs or a virus or something in the water.
Or somebody with telepathy.
Say what?
Well, there's this girl, Madeline. Kind of a pain. Anyway, she's running against Richie for freshman class president. Only Richie thinks she's a bang baby and can turn people into brain puppets.
Brain puppets?
Okay, I know it sounds crazy.
Brain puppets! Oh, Virgil, you've definitely been watching too much science fiction.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's what I told Richie.
Sharon's giving him a hard time about stealing her books without asking. And he explains that something's going on at school where people aren't acting like themselves. And maybe it's drugs or maybe it's mind controlling brain puppets, as he calls it. And she just bursts into laughter. This is the silliest thing Sharon's ever heard. And I'm like, if you live in this town,
right?
Where do you get off laughing off anything? Like, there's giant purple hulks. There's that kid that could like turn his toys into giant monsters.
Uh-huh.
There's a fire guy. There's a water girl. There's
rubber. She was dating Rubber Band Man.
Right. It's like, where do you get off saying that mind control is like, that's a step too far when you live in Dakota? It's like, and I understand it plays into kind of like the horror movie homage that this is, where, you know, the main character's kind of figuring out that something's amiss and everybody around him is telling him he's crazy and
right,
he worries too much. I get what they're going for here. And it is a very funny scene. It was just one of those things where you go like, where do you get off saying that that's too ridiculous for Dakota when we think about all of the crazy stuff we've seen,
right?
When we've seen Coolio and whatever else in this crazy town. But yes, so Virgil decides he's going to sleep on it and then try to figure out what's next. And as he drifts off to Slumberland, he begins to have some very strange dreams. And it becomes clear that while Madeline was in Richie's head, she has in fact put two and two together and has figured out that Virgil and Static are the same person. And we get this very trippy dream sequence, which we'll certainly talk more about in visuals. And as Virgil wakes up, thinking at first that it was all just a bad dream, he happens to peer out his window and see more of these zombie brain puppets walking in the street. And if that's not bad enough, as he goes to open his door, he gets another surprise.
Yep, it's not just not his fellow classmates that have succumbed to the brain puppet master here. We see that Virgil's dad and sister also have been affected by it, and they are trying to force him to stay in his room, and he has to kind of go up against them a little bit. He shocks them both a little bit and locks them in his room. After successfully evading his dad's large grasp, and he makes it out on his own, and out on the street, he does interact with a few additional brain puppets, including Richie, who unfortunately tries to also restrain Static, Virgil, but is not able to. Virgil then realizes that he has to figure out exactly what's going on and sees all of the zombies are headed in seemingly in one direction. And he kind of follows them and realizes they are in fact headed to the school. Virgil does his best to sort of blend in with the other zombies so that they don't notice him. A classic zombie trope: in order to disguise yourself, amongst the zombies, you have to become a zombie. That's from Night of the Living Dead all the way up through The Walking Dead. I believe that's a pretty standard trope there. So more homages to the classic genre there. And as he gets to the school, he realizes that he finds Madeline there about to make a speech in front of a zombie audience, which I cackled at. I thought that was quite funny. she's brought them all there and forces them to give reactions to her, and is verbally displeased when they don't cheer when they say that she's going to run and win the presidency of the school the next day.
My name is Madeline Spaulding, and I am running for freshman class president. Hello.
Yay.
Some of us are destined for greatness. It's a gift, but it's also a burden, especially if nobody else appreciates that greatness.
This could go on a while.
Especially if everybody is so mean and not doing their job, so that the really great people have to do all the extra work and never get any thanks and never get invited to sleepovers or anything! Only now it's gonna be different. Tomorrow you will all vote for me as president of the freshman class. And if that goes well, why stop with freshmen? I could run the school. I could be president of everybody!
Whoa there, Madam President! I demand a recount!
What are you doing here?
Shutting you down, lady! I have your whole crazy speech on tape! Your cover is blown!
She also mentions in her speech that she may not stop with class president, that she might take over the world as well. Of course she will. And it's during this time, we realized that Virgil has snuck up and began videotaping. See, kids, videotapes. It's kind of like a cell phone, except it was a giant device that required a giant item to record said video on it instead of a tiny little cell phone. But he records the entire speech and threatens to take it to the Dakota police eventually, or I guess that's his plan, but he is stopped. As he has transformed into static and reveals to Madeline that he in fact has the tape. She sicks her brain puppets on him, and there's a chase that happens through the school. The zombies end up getting buckets of water and throwing them on static, which has in fact in the past been a vulnerability for static. We did learn that in one of the episodes recently. I think one of the ones we covered in the last month, there was water was a big vulnerability for him. So that dampened his powers. He wasn't able to use his powers. So there is a very Scooby-Doo like chase that occurs after that, as as you may have alluded to in our intro, as static is chased across the school, across the basketball court, after being showered with water. And eventually is caught by the football team. The varsity team catches him in the locker room. And as Madeline is celebrating her victory and talking about how not only is she not threatened by the fact that Static has the tape, but if he were to take it to the police, she'll just take over the police's mind as well. And she's going to continue to take over everybody's mind. And that Static is extremely lucky that he has this vulnerability, and it's right then her hubris, as is the case in most cases with the villain, takes over, and she decides that Static is she's not going to let it stand that she can't take over his mind. She's going to use her powers, a hands-on approach of placing her hands on Static's temples in an attempt to overpower his invulnerability to this mind control. And it doesn't quite work out in Madeline's favor.
Static! Richie?
Yes, Richie. And the varsity football team. You may as well give me that videotape. Even if you show it to the police, I would just take over their minds too. From now on, I'm the boss.
Oh yeah? Well, you're not the boss of me.
Am too.
Am not.
Am too.
Am not.
Oh, hold him! You will do as I
Why are we out here in our underwear?
That's right. As she tries to, as you said, physically bend Virgil to her will. She's overwhelmed by there's a literal shock to her system, in fact, as static. It gives her a big jolt of electricity, which fries not only her body, but also apparently her brain, as she immediately drops back and faints, and then we see all of her zombie puppets have returned to normal, and we see that Madeline has passed out, and all of the students are kind of confused and embarrassed to be walking around school in their pajamas. It's everybody's worst nightmare come to life. You're in school in your pajamas, but we get a short little epilogue at school where we see that Joey has won the presidency. Richie graciously gives him a concession speech and congratulates him on winning. And then as they walk off, Virgil mentions that he went to check in on Madeline, who has been has been placed in an asylum, and at the moment doesn't even remember her own name or that she's a metahuman, much less his secret identity. So that allows him to have a little bit of peace of mind after she had previously threatened to expose him if he tried to stop her. So all's well that ends well, as our two buddies go off to get some snacks to end the episode.
All right, Liam. So I guess we can talk about our scores for this episode. It is, I will preface before we get into our scores, it is a goofy episode for sure. I think you were right off the bat. I say goofy in an endearing way too, not goofy.
Oh yeah.
Dumb. It's a clear love letter, as you mentioned, to a classic zombie movie, whatever your favorite zombie movie or zombie television show is. This is a clear homage to that, from the points of the character coming to grips with the fact that they can turn people into zombies, using that power for evil. You know, the invasion of Static's mind while he's in his sleep. There's certainly some scary moments, I would say. I think if I was a kid, would have been somewhat frightening to me if I was watching this episode. So I love that they called back to some of those classic horror movie tropes. You do have some homage to like a Scooby-Doo type thing in this as well. Of course, it takes place at a high school and some of it is played for laughs, and the way that the zombies kind of look and walk. And as I said, some of the jokes that are used and thrown in, and you know, the way that our villain sort of reacts and talks, and ultimate goal, and the fact that she's basically undone in a Daffy Duck Bugs Bunny argument type of way, where she's, you know, tricked into trying to get Statics to succumb to the brain puppetism is pretty funny as well. So you get some different homages to more of the comedic examples of a cartoon like this. So it's a lot of fun. I did enjoy it. I think that looking at the setting, honestly, I didn't think that this was something that would be too alien for like a season 3 Batman Beyond episode. Like, it's a little bit more jokey than you would expect from a Batman Beyond episode, but I feel like there's a lot that could have fit right in here. Like, it felt similar in tone to that third season of Batman Beyond, because it, some of it was played for laughs, but there was a lot that was pretty serious and pretty high stakes. So I really enjoyed it overall. It is a little bit goofy, like I said, so it's hard to give this a very serious, like high score. But I think as far as what they were looking to accomplish, the things they were looking to homage, the things that they were, the fun that they were trying to have while also telling this story and ultimately setting up some more stories down the road, I think they did a really good job. So I ended up giving a 7 out of 10 for this episode. What about you?
Yeah, I actually gave it the exact same score. I think it's very fun. It is very light and silly, and like you said, there's a lot of Scooby-Doo in the DNA of this episode. There's a lot of kind of classic schlocky horror vibes to it, which we'll certainly talk about again in visuals as well. But yeah, it's a very fun episode. There are little things that just always make me laugh in stories like this. Like when we start the episode and Madeline is like, it's not just that like people don't like, she's like quiet and kind of mousy and people don't know her. Now everybody knows her in this school. It's just everyone hates her. Like, and it always makes me question, like, what did she do to this school? What did she do to all these people, like, right before this episode started, where everyone is, like, the second she walks? Because she's, like, she's, you know, she's just that. She wants to get some signatures so she can run for class president. Like, it's not like that's that terrible of a thing. And clearly, like, Richie and Virgil are never portrayed as like the most popular kids in school, but like Richie got those signatures real quick. So it's just like, there's some, it's not like you're, but you're also really never meant to feel sorry for her. This isn't like a Carrie situation or something where this is like the bullied, you know, the bullied girl takes revenge. Like you don't really get that vibe from it. It's just like, she's just kind of this weird, annoying person from the second we meet her.
Right.
And she just never lets her foot off the gas. And then all of a sudden she gets, it's just that, you know, she gains this magical power that allows her to make people do what she wants instead of just sort of impotently complaining and yelling at them. So it's like, it's just funny to me when they have a character like this, where like we're not really trying to make like a, again, it's a quick episode, and for what the plot is, it works perfectly. Again, it's not at all in any way a critique. It's just always funny when you introduce a new character like this, and you're like, everyone immediately is just like, oh, I hate this person before she's ever like a supervillain that's trying to turn the entire city into zombies. She's already like somehow everybody's least favorite person at this school, and I just think that's hilarious. And so I enjoyed that part of this plot as well. And then yeah, like I said, it's just silly zombie homage, like we said. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a silly fun plot, and then you mix up every show set in a high school. Like you said, this could have been a Beyond episode. Like any school set in the high school, you got to do the class president episode at some point. So, for
sure. Absolutely. So
yeah, I think it checks another box off the genre. A couple different genre homages for Static in this case.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. And as you mentioned, Tama Production Co. Ltd. is responsible for this week's animation. And, you know, we tend to talk about the animation studios kind of briefly when we're going through. We know our favorites. We know the ones that, you know, the Coco Dong Yangs, the TMSs. The ones that were like, yeah, these are really, really good. And then, you know, of course, those that we don't love a lot. And this one we talked about before we went on the air, only ended up doing 4 episodes, and we've only covered one of the episodes thus far of Static that they did. And that was Pop's Girlfriend, which I believe we covered the last month we did Static, mm-hmm. a couple months ago. You can check that one out in the archives at dcaureview.com. It's an interesting episode to talk about. But yeah, so thoughts on the animation studio from your perspective? Mine, I'd say very dynamic in the way that the characters move. I thought it was definitely more that Disney flavor of characters being very expressive with their eyes and their the way that they emoted themselves and big wide eyes. And that's not even counting like the zombie expressions and stuff like that. That they communicated the characters once they had been turned into brain puppets. But I thought for a season 2 episode, again, we're looking back, not a lot of cell shading done. The season 1 character designs or the early season character designs, I thought that the animation studio was pretty solid. I didn't notice any real inconsistencies or real odd things other than the characters were extremely expressive and moved a lot. Like they move a lot in their communication, like their hands are moving, their arms are moving. There's not a lot of, pardon the pun, static animation, which in a way I think makes things look a little bit better, but that's just my opinion. Any thoughts on the overall animation studio along with our other animation visuals?
Yeah, I think we talked about this last month when we did Static. We're in this weird like transitional era of Static where we're still in season two, but they've already, I think, kind of updated the model sheets a little bit, and they're kind of already sort of melding him more into that that DCAU style. He's not quite as like sharp. He doesn't have like quite as that like sharp and like that thin pointy chin as he did kind of in season one and the start of season two. So there feels like a more gradual redesign, more, I would say, more akin to sort of how the back end of Batman the Animated Series, we got more of the, we kind of did away with those alternate takes on Batman, and we just got like that super, super square jaw on model Batman for pretty much every episode after. Mm-hmm. I feel like that with this back half of this season of Static, it's kind of this weird hybrid of the early season animation with what would become the standard going forward for seasons three and four. So we're kind of in this weird transitional era. But yeah, as an episode itself, yeah, I think that there's not a ton of like straight up, you know, superhero action, because there's not really a villain for Static to you know, to fight in a traditional sense that and we can talk about more specific sequences in a second. But yeah, I think as far as what they pulled off, and we'll talk about it from the direction, what I'm sure was a lot of work from the director and storyboard artists as well, of all the kind of specific, a lot of close-ups, which of course make, because every time you do the zombie reveal, you kind of get the big close-up with, as you mentioned, the big wide eyes and the open mouth and everything. So they do some pretty fun tricks, I think, with the camera and close-ups and zooms and reaction shots that maybe we don't get in our average Static episode, because he's usually fighting, you know, giant bugs or purple guys or whatever. So this gave us a little more to play with as far as the big horror movie style face reveals and things like that to play with in the animation.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's the way that the characters, again, especially the zombie faces, the different ways that they kind of showed those transformations once she took over, I thought that those were done really well. I liked that the characters really kind of give you that classic stiff sort of distorted body of a zombie as they're kind of walking around, whether it's through the city or in the school, or it really drives home, you know, that this is an homage to a classic zombie film, or a Living Dead film, if you will. Really, I liked the brief homages here and there to the Scooby-Doo, that same sequence that I mentioned where he's trying to escape the group from the school, and there's a literal like left to right pan of Static running across the screen, and then this crowd of brainless humans following him. It's just, it looks like Scooby and Shaggy running away from the monster of the week, you know. It's a clear nod to that. I thought the dream sequence was super trippy. Mm-hmm. I liked that, you know, where Static is dreaming, and mostly it was the backgrounds and the different optical illusions they used to kind of create that dreamy sequence. But even like the giant, Madeline's giant head that shows up, and it starts out, off as just like a mouth, and then it turns into a full head, and then it morphs back, and it's super trippy. Thought they had a lot of fun doing that. Meanwhile, like, Virgil is static, is flying around in there, and you know, the backgrounds keep changing and shifting into these different three-dimensional, you know, optical illusions. But I thought that was done really, really well. Also, yeah, I think overall, looking at the episode as a whole, I think it's pretty fun. And you know, they took some of those artistic liberties, I'd say, because it was a little more goofy of an episode, to have more fun. There's one shot where I think Static is coming to this realization that the entire town is turned into zombies. So they do this kind of far out shot, and then it cuts, and it's like a close up shot of his eye, and then they go all the way into his iris. So you get this like three consecutive shots, and it's not a straight zoom. It's just like a cut. So you get a far out, medium, and then a close up. And I thought that was, you know, reminiscent of a comic book panel, or, you know, could be a horror movie also, but Really enjoyed that too. But overall, I think looking at the and grading on a curve, especially for this show, some of the problems that we've had with some of the early season animation, I thought this episode was really smooth. I thought that the characters looked on model for the most part. Some of the expressions were just, I felt, really, really strong. So I ended up giving a pretty strong score of 8 out of 10 for the animation. What about you?
Yeah, and I once again gave it the exact same score, just for all the reasons we've talked about, the specific horror movie homages. I believe there's a specific one that's we get this kind of strange scene where Virgil runs out into the street and he kind of gets through the crowd and he sees Richie standing kind of off in the distance, and all of a sudden fog just rolls in for 1 second and then disappears again, which I thought was funny. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you get the big dramatic turnaround where Richie, you know, kind of hisses and points at him, which I think is specifically a homage to Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is kind of like I said, one of those very classic schlocky horror movies. So that I thought that was fun. And like I said, as you already mentioned, I think we were talking about plot, the Scooby-Doo chase when Virgil gets his power shorted out by the water and he has to just run away on foot from these people. And it's like the Hanna-Barbera running animation. Like if you're at all familiar with any of those cartoons, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. where it's, you know, static running across the background and then this like crew of people, you know, quickly running behind him. Like it's so Hanna-Barbera. It's incredible. Like it's a great little quirky homage to throw in there. And then, yeah, the actual, like I said, all the close-ups of the zombies and stuff I thought are fun. And then, as you mentioned, I think undoubtedly the highlight of the episode is that, or the visual highlight at least, is that dream sequence where he's floating through all this sort of strange text and he's falling through these giant Madeline for President posters. And then, like you said, the mount, the sort of Cheshire grin appears, and then, you know, her face spears with the glowing eyes. It's all very, very trippy and fun. It felt like I said, because we don't have a traditional supervillain for Static to zap or punch or whatever, it gave the, you know, the directors and storyboard artists and animators a big chance to do some really fun, trippy stuff for what we could do with our, you know, quote unquote action for this week's episode. And they did some really fun stuff with it.
Yeah, I agree completely, and it reflects in our scores because of it. So great job to our animation team and our director for this week. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be the music category. And that was, of course, done by Dick Wolfie Wolf, not the Law and Order Dick Wolf, as we tend to point out, as we do each and every time we review a Static episode, but... So music for this week, I was a little bit nervous because we kicked off with a song with lyrics, and I thought to myself, this is going to be a very long episode if I have to review this and every single musical number accompanying our zombies is like a goofy lyrical composition. I was pleasantly surprised, as I don't recall hearing another lyrical composition for the remainder of the episode. So great job, Mr. Wolf. Because of that, I went with a pretty standard score of 5 out of 10. I thought that the music that accompanied some of, again, the trippy dream sequence, I think that was enhanced certainly by some of the musical accompaniment. Anytime that Static sort of had the what would have been, if this was a serious movie, I guess a jump scare moment where he's mm-hmm. realizing the zombies are there, or Richie, as you mentioned, in that one sequence is in fact a zombie. His parents opening the door to his dad and his sister, rather, outside of his door. There's some jump scare moments there that were accompanied mm-hmm. by some classic crescendos in that way. So I appreciated that, but. I think standard 5 out of 10 score is justified because I didn't think that there was anything that added to it in any particular way, but didn't take away from anything. And of course, the less music accompaniment that has lyrical content, the higher the score for me. So
of course,
5 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, I went a little bit higher. I went 6 out of 10 for my music score. Not too much higher, but I thought the all of the, as we've been talking about, these sort of, you know, 50s and 60s sci-fi horror homages, they were all kind of accompanied with that, those very like you know, kind of Twilight Zone-y you know, like sounds, and I don't know the name of whatever that like whistle or whatever it is that's used when like aliens show up in a black and white TV show. Mm-hmm. But I feel like people can tell what I'm talking about, or at least I hope they do. I play drums. I don't know the name. I barely know the names of any other. Like, if I can't pick up two sticks and hit it, I don't know what it is. But so I'm not an expert to say that. But I felt like there was some good you know, genre appropriate music for this sort of wacky one, as you mentioned. Kind of got out of our usual, you know, dance drum machine hip hop music that we might expect for a static episode, and got into this sort of a ethereal kind of weird Twilight Zone-y place for some of those from some of those big zombie reveals. And then at the end there, when Static's making his big comeback at the end, and he kind of gives her the zap and she begins to fall back, we get the Static theme kicked in at the end there. So yeah, I thought they did a pretty fun job with it overall, and added a little bit to the overall homage of this, as we said, this sort of classic like 60s sci-fi horror feel that they were going for.
All right, Liam, let's wrap things up here with our final category of the day, which is going to be our voice acting. And while we have a lot of series regulars here and in brief appearances, we do get a couple of new voices as well worth talking about. So let's run down today's voice cast as we discuss our voice acting category.
That's right. Not a big cast this week. We do briefly have Michelle Morgan as Sharon, and well, the credits said Kevin Michael Richardson's in this episode. I don't think that's him doing the grunts for because Virgil's
dad. He does talk. He talks. Oh, he does. Okay, like it's in a zombie voice, but it's I think it was
okay. Him. So it is him, but. But yeah, so we have briefly Michelle Morgan. I do think Michelle Morgan's really funny in that scene where, like I said, even though it's preposterous that she wouldn't believe that mind control is possible living in this town, I think she's pretty funny in that scene. But yeah, it's mostly, we do have Jason Marsden, of course, as Richie, doing a little bit of comic relief as he runs on his Fix the Vending Machines campaign.
Lots of homages to classic presidential a U.S. presidential campaign yes. speeches, as well as I did enjoy his one line where Static says, you know, that the guy that's running
Joey's not smart enough to be president.
Yes. And he says, yeah, he's a nice guy, but he's not smart enough to be president. And then he says, yeah, but that hasn't stopped anybody before. I mean, I'm not looking at anybody who is currently serving in office or has prior served in office. But if that is an on the nose evergreen comment, I don't know what it is.
Yes, and Mr. Morrison's delivery of that line is great. Like you said, it's you could argue it's low hanging fruit, but it's all in the delivery.
Absolutely,
and they're great in that sequence. And then, yeah, we do briefly have a couple of our other regulars. Danica McKellar is briefly in here as Frida, and interestingly, Crystal Scales, who plays Daisy, is in this episode, but Daisy's not in this episode.
So I guess they just brought her in. Give us record some extra dialogue.
Right, but yes, our main episodes, we do have Philip Tanzini voicing Joey, who's speaking of the episode with the homeless guy who gives people superpowers. He previously played Run, one of the thugs who worked for Ragtag in that episode. Uh-huh. So back here playing the dumb jock in Joey. He's solid in there, has some funny moments, especially when he's doing the zombie speech. He's pretty funny there. And then, yeah, we, of course, have our main villain of the episode, Kimberly Brooks, playing Madeline Spaulding. Does a lot of voices on Static. And then actually later on would go on to voice Kathy Duquesne in the Mystery of the Batwoman film. And done a lot of other voice acting as well. She's very good. Because again, this is a lot for a guest star. We talk about this whenever a guest star is kind of asked to run the episode like she is. Like, we start with her. She's kind of the main voice, other than, of course, Phil Lamar is Static. Like, she's kind of the main driving force of this episode. And just playing, again, like this. And also, like I said, because it almost borderlines, like when Richie gets up on the table and is running his campaign, and then she comes over and he's like, well, how many signatures do you have, Madeline? Like, right. It could borderline on, like, cruel and bullying.
Right.
But to Miss Brooks' credit, she's so kind of snooty and uptight and controlling throughout this episode that we never really drift into feeling sorry for her. Like, she's a very, like, classic. She very quickly becomes like this classic cackling Saturday morning cartoon villain, complete with a Wicked Witch of the West, Wizard of Oz homage, and like the big witch cackle after it as well, when she tells the students to get Static and his little tape too. Like, she completely embraced the heel role, so to speak, in this week's episode.
No, she's really, really good. Very impressed. I thought that, it's great that she comes back and has the opportunity to come back, spoiler alert, in some additional episodes. Also having she plays Puff on the series as well, so mm-hmm. another recurring character. So it's a very good performance. She's clearly a very gifted voice actress. She's also from our hometown of Baltimore, Maryland too, on top
That's
of it,
right.
So super hometown pride with that one. So yeah, I greatly enjoyed her performance. I think you buy it hook, line, and sinker from the beginning, from her kind of general frustration and kind of being dismissed for whatever reason, that she's not liked very much, to the immediate sort of switch that flips where she realizes that she has this power, and with this great power, she's not using any of the great responsibility that comes with it. She's she's evil, baby. So she's going to use it. So yeah, very talented actress, and quite frankly, blew me away with how great from the different dynamics of what she has to do from the beginning, just kind of being a general high school student that's just trying to get elected and clearly is a little bit high strung, but you know, doesn't give any hint that she's gonna turn evil. And then as soon as that switch gets flipped, she embraces it and really, really, you buy into the fact that she really enjoys the fact that she can now actually control people's minds. And there's some comedy bits that she has to fill in there, some lines that she has to deliver. And I thought all of that was really done really, really well. So really great performance from her. And looking forward to hearing potential episodes where she comes back.
And I should also mention that she voices Oracle / Barbara Gordon and Batgirl in quite a few DC video games, including Injustice, including the first two Batman Arkham games, and also I think in some of the Lego games as well. So a well-seasoned DC voice actress is Miss Brooks here. So a lot of credits to her name. And then, of course, as mentioned, the great Phil Lamar. He's kind of playing the straight man to all of this, the guy who's reacting as the whole town goes crazy around him. He does a good job. Like I said, it's really Miss Brooks's episode, but of course him as the protagonist of the show has to still pull his weight, and unsurprisingly, he does a solid job as well. And I ended up giving voice acting another pretty strong score of 8 out of 10 for this.
Nice. I actually went 1 point higher with a 9 out of 10. I think if you take everybody else away and you just have Miss Brooks there, I think you have a strong enough episode to argue for a really high score. But then, of course, you throw in the great film Phil Lamar and Jason Marsden's chemistry, of course, working together. Mr. Lamar had a lot to do when it comes to some solo work, as he's sort of narrating the parts where everybody else is turned into a zombie. So he has to kind of dialogue a little bit to himself. thought that that still sounded natural. And then his interactions with everybody else and his interactions with Ms. Brooks at the end. So all of that really, really strong and I think well-deserving of praise as this was a all around really, really enjoyable episode. So yeah, I guess we can begin to total up our scores now as we've reached the end of our episode and totaling everything up. Liam, I come out with at least for static, a pretty strong 29 out of 40. What about you?
Yeah, and I think even though we differed in a couple categories, it ends up equaling out to the same final score as I also arrived at a 29 out of 40. So yeah, to talk about rewatchability, this character does come back, mm-hmm. and in a pretty major way, which we will be talking about perhaps a little bit later this month, in fact. I think even this is just a very fun episode. It's a specific, like we said, it's a genre homage to a specific sort of era of sci-fi and horror. And then it's also like like we said, the class president episode. And then it's just kind of a silly, funny episode on top of that. So I think this is a pretty strong thumbs up for rewatchability.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say if maybe not in the grand scheme of the DCAU, but we've talked about that, especially with the early episodes of Static where he wasn't quite grafted in, that, you know, the argument could be made that not a lot of those episodes are important enough for the overall DCAU continuity as far as a must watch is concerned. But Static episodes, we've had our fair share that we didn't like or that we thought were just, you know, a little bit too kiddy or a little bit lacking in some way or another. I think even though it didn't crack the above 30 mark for us, I think overall this episode is solid in each one of our categories that we talked about here. And maybe on a different day, the winds blow in a different direction. We might, you know, its score might have been even higher. So I think as far as recommending this episode, if you're watching, looking for a fun Static episode to watch, I would say, hey, check out Attack of the Living Brain Puppets, especially if you're a fan of that like cult classic horror movie genre of, you know, zombie movies. Or heck, if you watched The Walking Dead for 4 or 3 or 10, however many seasons it ended up with, you might pull some things out of there that you kind of chuckle over. So even though this came out way before that show was on. So yeah, I would say it's a recommendation for it, especially if you're looking for a fun, entertaining Static episode. And as we mentioned, that, you know, Madeline ends up coming back. So if you're watching through these, you may need to know who she is based on her reappearance. So I agree. All right, Liam, let's wrap things up here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. Don't forget, we would love your support if you enjoyed this episode. Heck, even if you didn't enjoy this episode, we would still love your support. And there's several different ways for you to do so. The first of which is to support us by following us on our social media pages. That's at DCAU Review on Twitter/X. I'm just going to call it Twitter forever. You guys know what I'm talking about. Unless this is 50 years from now, whenever now is, and Twitter is long forgotten, you know, check us out on Twitter at DCAU Review. You can also follow us at DCAU Review on Instagram. We are also on Mark Zuckerberg's other social media sites, but those are used far less often. But hey, if you're on there and you want to follow us or interact with us, you can always do so that way as well. We will get your information one way or the other. Not get your information. That sounds like we're going to stalk you. I mean, we will get to any interactions that you have with us one way or the other. So you can also interact with us if you listen to us on your favorite podcast app. We would appreciate a subscription, whether you listen through Apple, Google, Spotify, whatever podcast app you listen to, subscribe to us. Your new episodes, of course, are delivered automatically when you do so. If your podcast app allows you to leave a review of some kind, 5 stars are appreciated. Heck, if it allows you to leave a little blurb like Apple Podcasts does, you can do so. And we'll read those and appreciate them if you do. Also, if you listen to us on Spotify, we don't mention this every single week, but you can do so each and every week. There is a poll of the week and a question of the week that you can interact with us if you listen to us via Spotify. We do get some people that regularly do that. We appreciate those that do. Give us your opinion. There's usually some comedy involved in the questions. They're usually not too serious. But you can always interact with us that way. And then if you don't want to interact with us in public, you can always send us a DM via Twitter or Instagram if you want to share your thoughts about the episode or past episodes or general thoughts on the DCAU or really anything. So we love interacting with anybody that listens to the show, and we'll have some things probably that you want to interact with us beginning next week. But another reminder, check out the show notes if you want to support us monetarily. There's a link to our store there if you want to buy a piece of merchandise. There's also a link to donate to us directly if you want to buy Liam and I a coffee. And thank you for listening to this podcast. That our monthly subscribers that support us on a monthly basis do so, give their hard-earned dollars every single month, and we appreciate you if you do that. And even if you don't do that, we appreciate you. But Liam, as I alluded to, and as we alluded to, there is sort of a backdoor theme to this month, and we are excited because over the next couple of episodes, we have some additional content to supplement with our standard reviews that we'll be giving. Let's talk a little bit about that, because this is a fun month.
Absolutely. So as mentioned, this first episode that we covered this month was written by a gentleman by the name of Len Yulee. And in fact, every episode we cover this month will be written by Mr. Yulee. And starting next week, we will be covering the first episode, that being the debut of a very memorable supporting character to the later seasons of Static, that being Shebang. We have Mr. Yulee on with us to talk about not only the creation of Shebang, but a whole lot more of his time writing on Static. And as you mentioned, Cal, not only will we have excerpts from that conversation about specifically about Static dropped into our regular reviews, but we actually have a very nice long form conversation and interview with Mr. Yulee that will be dropping later in the month as a bonus as well. No spoilers, but just a great, fascinating guy who's had a great long tenured career in animation and in writing in Hollywood, and talked about a lot of stuff that I think we recorded it a couple months ago. We weren't sure if it would still be current, but turns out there's even more people on strike than there were when we first recorded the episode now. So great insights into kind of how the industry works, especially for people that are in animation, who are in even kind of worse positions to negotiate sometimes than those in the big SAG and SAG-AFTRA unions and stuff. So a really fascinating conversation that will be dropping later in the month, but you'll first get to hear Mr. Yulee next week when we review the aptly titled Shebang.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Not a full quote-unquote special correspondent episode. We didn't go and review each episode that he directed, just because we really wanted to get into some of the nitty-gritty and his fascinating career. So we'll drop some of those into next week's review. And as Liam mentioned, we'll have the full review later on in the month, the full interview rather, later on in the month. But it's going to be great. Again, just a lovely human being, worked alongside some of the classic DCAU creators, mm-hmm. has some great insight into the late great Dwayne McDuffie. You're not going to want to miss it. It's one to remember. So can't wait. It's going to be great. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Adios.